The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, the weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day.
This is Robert McKenzie introducing this week's discussion program from the studios of the BBC in London. Until a few days ago, one of the main topics of discussion, both inside and outside Britain, was the question, where does Britain stand in relation to the movement for European unity? But, of course, the outbreak of hostilities in Korea now overshadows everything, just as it overshadowed the debates on the Schuman Plan, which have taken place in the Houses of Parliament here within the past few days. Nevertheless, whatever the outcome of events in the Far East, the European problem will still be with us. And tonight we want to discover just what part Britain can and will play in the process of achieving real unity in Western Europe. Here with me in the studio are three British members of Parliament with a particular interest in foreign affairs, who are going to discuss this question for us. I want to introduce them to you. I have Mr. R.W.G. Mackay, MP, an Australian who has lived in Britain since 1934 and has been a Member of Parliament since 1945. Mr. Mackay is the author of a book entitled Federal Europe and was a member of the British Parliamentary Delegation to the European Assembly at Strasbourg. Then secondly, Mr. Duncan Sands, who is a Conservative Member of Parliament and who held several ministerial positions in the wartime coalition government. He is the international chairman of the Movement for European Unity. And thirdly, Mr. John Hind, who came into Parliament as a Labour Member of Parliament after many years in the trade union movement. For the first 2 years after the war, he was British Minister responsible for German and Austrian affairs, and subsequently Minister of Pensions. He is at present chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Parliamentary Labour Party. Well now, gentlemen, I want to come to grips with this subject as directly and as frankly as possible. I think all of us were impressed with the rapidity and directness with which Britain took up the challenge at Lake Success and her willingness to take a very active role in the present difficulties in the Far East. And yet, I must be frank with you, and I'm sure you'll agree with me that what I'm going to say is true, there is an extremely widespread criticism in North America, on the continent of Europe, and elsewhere, which takes this form. People are saying that Britain's attitude to European unity is a reluctant one. Indeed, I think it would not be too much to say that a great many people consider Britain the principal stumbling block to the achievement of European unity. And I want to ask you, as an opening question, what in fact is Britain's attitude toward the unity of Europe? Mr. Mackay.
Well, I think Britain's attitude is really very clear, though I can properly understand that people overseas, many miles away, don't appreciate it fully. I'd like to see European unity achieved tomorrow, but that's not being realistic. And most people over here are very keen to get European Union as quickly as possible, but they also appreciate the difficulties that arise. Britain isn't reluctant. Britain is trying to work the problem out in a right and serious way.
Mr. Sands.
Well, I think you're quite right when you say that the hostilities in Korea have overshadowed everything else. But it's all part and parcel of the same problem. The whole movement towards European unity is inspired by the determination and the necessity to take combined action to protect the freedom of all our peoples in this part of the world. If we remain divided in Europe, there's no doubt that we shall go forward towards a period of increasing impoverishment and increasing insecurity. We have learnt by very hard and bitter experience that we have the choice of either playing an active part, a leading part, in building up a new united Europe, or else the alternative is to go into Europe, to fight our way back into Europe every 20 years, as we've already done twice so far. And if we don't play our part in European unification, we shall have to do again, and perhaps a not very, very long time ahead.
Mr. Hind.
I find myself immediately at variance with Sands. To reply first to the question as to how far Europe, Britain has been the stumbling block, it should be borne in mind that Britain has taken the lead in the Marshall Plan, the Brussels Treaty, the Atlantic Pact, and finally in the establishment of the Council of Europe.
But I didn't say she'd been a stumbling block.
No. But when you come to the question of Korea, I think you give immediately the difference of approach to this whole question. I personally, and I think a large number of people in this country, don't regard the European unity as a question of defense, but primarily as a question of economic survival. And the mention of Korea brings in really one of the difficulties that Britain has to face. Is Europe, Western Europe, the unit which should be unified, or is it the whole of Europe, once we are able to penetrate the Iron Curtain, or is it a much wider community? And that immediately, of course, brings in the difficulties that have been raised in certain minds in this country as to our relationship with the Commonwealth, our relationship with America from the defense point of view, and therefore the problem of how far we should unite with the what is now Western Europe before we have considered the wider field of Europe in total or the wider community of the world.
That's a point I really want to get you to comment on, gentlemen. I've often heard it said that the British connection with the Commonwealth is a principal stumbling block which prevents her from taking a more active role in achieving the unity of Europe. Is that an excuse or is it a valid explanation?
Well, you better ask the other two, really, because I come from the Commonwealth. It really has been an excuse in the main. The Commonwealth can easily be transferred from a British Commonwealth into a European Commonwealth, and the rights and privileges that the people in the Dominions have can be attributed or transferred to Europe quite easily. But you better get an English view.
Mr. Sands.
Well, I would say this, that of course the fact that we are not just an island off the coast of Europe, but we are a leading member of a world commonwealth of nations obviously puts us in a different position from most of the other European nations. And it does raise problems and even difficulties in coming into a European Union.
But Sands, all the European countries have their overseas territories.
Yes, overseas territories. That's a very different thing from being associated with independent sovereign states like Canada and Australia and New Zealand and so forth. That's quite a different thing. But what I would say is that our difficulties are also our advantage. In coming into a European Union, just by ourselves, if we were just by ourselves, we would no doubt have an important contribution to make. But coming in as we do, as a partner in a great world commonwealth with vast, almost unlimited resources, we bring to the European Union a contribution which no other individual nation approaches.
Well, here I disagree with Mackay that the Commonwealth has been an excuse, and I tend to agree with Sand that there are practical complications here, but what it really raises is not whether the Commonwealth is a stumbling block to our participation in some form of European unity, but what kind of European unity can be achieved which would not prejudice our special relations with the Commonwealth.
Well, then let's face that question. You've all implied that Britain, in fact, favours European unity. What form of unity?
But before we do that, perhaps we could just say one word about our relations with America, if you don't mind.
Yes, certainly.
Because it seems to me that we can't think of European Union as something in isolation. We belong to three different unities here in Britain. The union of the British Commonwealth, the union of the Europe, and the union of the English-speaking peoples. And every one of those three unities is essential to our well-being and, I believe, to the security and progress of the world. And therefore, we can only look at European Union against that background.
But Sands, putting it that way, which I don't differ with very greatly, but putting it that way, surely that only really means that if we can get some kind of unity in Europe and associate the Commonwealth with it, then we have a much better opportunity of going to the United States and to North America and saying to the North Americans, let the democracies of the world come together. Here is a big unit already prepared. Will you come with us in order to try and develop this process of government further than it's gone? There's nothing inconsistent. There's no obstacle to Atlantic Union by Britain playing a large part in organizing a real unity of Europe.
No, all I'm trying to make clear is that these are really three overlapping conceptions.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
There's no good trying to produce some clearly defined explanation as to exactly where the one begins and the other ends. We are in all three, and we've got to play a major part in every one of these three combinations.
Yes, but there is one point we mustn't overlook. It's quite a false conception to regard the Commonwealth as a distinct problem from European unity. The Commonwealth, in fact, in my opinion, cannot survive unless there is a strong European unity.
Yeah, I quite agree with that.
Because, after all, Britain alone is a very isolated outpost in Europe, and Europe without Britain, Western Europe without Britain, is a very weak protection against the communist menace, if that is the real menace to peace. And therefore, it seems to me that the Commonwealth itself would be very much concerned about having not a link with Britain alone, but a link with a Britain which was tied economically and politically to a European Union.
Sam?
Yeah, well, I agree with you, but it seems to me that first of all, I agree that the Commonwealth needs Europe. But I would say that Europe, even more, needs to be associated with the British Commonwealth.
Well, now, what form can European unity take? I assume you've all, from what you've said, roughly endorsed the idea of European unity, but what form can that unity take which will permit Britain to be fully participant in it without in any way leading to complications with the Commonwealth?
Well, I think there are a lot of answers to this, and this is where the problem is. And quite frankly, and we better be frank about it, it is because of the difficulty of deciding on the form of unity that people overseas seem to think that Britain and other European countries too aren't going ahead as fast with this thing as they'd like to. I've always been a mad federalist. I think that the federal system of government is the way in which you extend government over larger areas, and I've always stuck with Hamilton in thinking that where countries are contiguous to one another, they must come together in a form of government. So I've always backed the federal idea. But it's perfectly obvious when you're dealing with a continent like Europe that the federal idea may not apply. At any rate, it mightn't apply in the form in which it's understood in North America. Bear in mind this very simple fact that when America came together, there were 4 million people in an agricultural population. Today, we've got 280 million in Europe in a country, in an area which has had the Industrial Revolution and which has developed large national differences, many of the countries having been great powers. The conditions are completely different, and therefore we've got to work out a different form.
Sands?
Well, I'm not against the idea of a federation of Europe, but what I want to see is Europe united as quickly as possible and some practical headway made towards working together. There are two methods. There is the federal method, the constitutional method, and there is the functional method. The federal method consists in trying to persuade all the various existing governments of Europe, because we mustn't forget we're not starting with a clean slate. We're starting with a lot of sovereign states, every one of which has got to give its consent before any federal constitution can be established. That is to say, the federal method consists in persuading all these governments to agree to set up a federal authority and to transfer some part of their sovereignty to that authority. Well, good luck to Mackay if he can do it. But I think that if we tackle it that way, we shall spend years and years in constitutional argumentation, which will get us nowhere, and during which time we shall make no practical progress. Let me just say that the alternative is to tackle a series of specific practical problems of the immediate urgency which require practical solution, and to try and devise
whatever machinery may be necessary to deal with those problems together. In doing that, we shall, of course, have to set up some form of international or supranational or high authority, whatever you like to call it, which will exercise the necessary powers to see that something happens and that action is taken in those spheres. But the difference is that what I believe is the quickest way, the most practical way, is to deal with the immediate, urgent problems, concrete problems, which present themselves, and to devise some ad hoc machinery to deal with each one of those. Then we can think afterwards how to coordinate all these various pieces of machinery.
Sun says that... I got that he said that he is not in favor of federation as the means, because he said that would involve constitutional argumentation. But, of course, that raises the whole question of the Schuman plan, which, in fact, does involve constitutional argumentation, because it proposes to start by establishing a constitutional authority. Now, I consider myself as distinct from Mackay, who says he's a mad federalist. I consider myself a sane federalist.